want to know how to find it. Seek it out when they hide it. You know it's in the bag when it's an easy grab. But come on, take a chance now. So go, 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 geocache, geocache. And if you need help, we're right there in a flash. If you got a question, just call in and ask. Uncover the stash on the Geocaching Podcast. The Geocaching Podcast.
Welcome to the Geocaching Podcast, episode 458, recorded live on July 6th, 2016. I'm your host, Ted Hard Hat with
Daryl W. Forian,
Paz 427.
You can join our chat room and watch our live video stream, plus participate with us as we record this episode. All this and more can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. Be sure to contact us via our voicemail line at 63031-VOICE. And also find us on Twitter at geocachingpodcast.com/Twitter and Facebook at geocachingpodcast.com/Facebook. This episode is sponsored by our good patrons of the Geocaching Podcast. To become a contributing patron, simply click on our Patreon logo on our webpage to help keep our podcast going. From all of us at our Geocaching Podcast, we thank you. Hey guys, how's it going?
Not bad. And yourself?
Oh, doing great. As you fine folks can see, we have the wonderful Daryl W. Four along for the ride. I think this is going to be one of the last ones till we can get our whole crew together.
Yeah, I think this is the last one that we had booked for the Scott outage.
Yes, he's been out for, a good couple of months, and I think tonight he's actually celebrating with his son when it comes to the baseball banquet, so... Yeah, it's been a long season, but they've been doing great. They won championships. They did all sorts of fun stuff, so congrats to them. Excellent, excellent stuff. Let's see. I'm trying to go over stuff that we had. Oh, yeah, yeah. Got a couple of local geocaches. I was approached by the people from Mobital. I hope I pronounced that right. And they said, hey, could you check out our Android-based geocaching app called GeoLive? And I just got a chance to check it out. We'll have a link in the show notes for it. But I really want to take it for a spin out this weekend just to check it out. Now, Darryl, you actually had a little bit of experience of it way back when. This isn't like it's brand new, but it looks like it's been greatly modified.
Oh, absolutely. They're on version, I think it said 7.6 or something like that. And so I went and downloaded it, and I'm like, wait a minute, I already have this.
Oh, okay.
But apparently I've had this for quite a while, and I seem to remember vaguely that this was one of those early geocaching live API apps that, you know, we tried and didn't like it or whatever, and just it kind of went by the wayside. So it looks like it's a really up-to-date, very modern look. And I'm anxious to give it a shot myself.
Yeah, the one cool thing I did get a chance to see that caught my eye was that when you click on a particular geocache, you zoom in on the live map for it. It actually puts a couple of helpful hints that you might use as. Think of it like trailheads getting to the geocache. Like there's an open parking lot over here, or there's a end of the street over there. There's some helpful hints that may or may not be. I want to see how creative they are. I just want to know how it uses the logic to pick those even up to sit there and say there's enough of a space.
They're not using like the OSM maps, or even they are heavily using Google Maps. I did notice that.
Right.
Google Maps does use the trail maps, I think originally from OSM, though I don't think they're doing that now.
Yeah.
So if they have the trail maps, things like trailheads are easy to find because those were actually routable.
Yeah, this one was actually like it was a geocache that's kind of in a neighborhood. And there's a greenway that goes by, but it also had like literally the other side of the set of trees right there was an empty parking lot or an empty lot, period. And then it had kind of like another one where the trail, you could actually get off the trail to get over to it. And it actually flags it. There's a little icon that puts on it. And when you click on it, it'll actually tell you what it thinks it is as the type of helpful hint to get to it. I thought that was kind of unique.
Yeah, I just downloaded it. I'll have to give that a try.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing I noticed is that they're making heavy use of the street view.
Yes. Yes.
So that can be really helpful if you're trying to figure out, you know, if you can park somewhere or...
Or which light post you're looking at.
Exactly. So, yeah, it's a cool little app that I'll have to spend some time with.
Yeah, I'll give it a shot this weekend. If I'm not dodging lightning bolts, we went through last night, real, real quick story. Real bad set of storms were coming our way. We were just about ready to go out and go get something to eat. Wife's feeding the cats, and one of the cats is missing. And it's like, where'd it go? We're calling, we're looking, we're searching everywhere. It's starting to get to the point of, did he get out? And like the storm's crashing and you hear the thunder going and it's like, maybe he's in the backyard. I mean, in-house cats, it's, you know, that's how it goes. We're looking and literally I'm walking around the back part of the house and I saw the lightning bolt. When I saw the lightning bolt, you know, that electric sound that you hear with electricity. I heard the lightning bolt before the thunder, which hit immediately after. It's like, I've had enough. So, yeah, that's the kind of storms that we've had out here lately. Long story short, yes, we found the cat. He was scared and hiding under, literally inside a chair in the house. But, yeah, lightning storms, be careful when you're out there geocaching, folks.
Yeah, generally you don't want to be caching in a lightning storm.
No, that will definitely make your hair stand up in multiple ways.
Yeah, but, you know, you can send some of that rain this way. We've been really dry.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, Chicago's been getting some rain.
Right.
You know, I was talking with Scott the other day, and they've been getting rain. But we've had, like, no rain here in I don't know how long. Our grass is pretty much all dead. We were out on the trail this weekend. We spent 2 days on the Paint Creek Trail and didn't find 11 of the caches that we looked for.
Uh-oh.
A couple of them were definitely damaged and gone. You know, the rest of them just... Yeah, have you ever gone out there and gotten just so frustrated by one or two DNFs that you're just done for? You know,
yes.
It's like, you know, if I can't find this in like 2 minutes, yes, that's it. I'm moving on.
There is zero fun factor.
Right, right. And, you know, it was like a whole series of those. You know, and we did 20, you know, out of 31 attempts in 2 days, we only got 20.
Oh.
So, yeah, that was not a very good day. And we were having problems with the GPSRs. They were taking us all over the place. Ironically, the iPhones were the most accurate. They were almost always, you know, oh, it's right over here. I think the worst was we had 6 feet off on the iPhones, whereas the eTrex 30 and the 62 ST
right,
were just all over the place. One of them, the 62 ST, was off something like 80 feet.
Wow.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's I don't have a whole lot of faith anymore to my GPS.
When the iPhones have the better accuracy, that makes
right.
It interesting.
Well, it's speculation, but I still think that the triangulation based on Wi-Fi and on cell towers does help. And one of the things we were dealing with, there were power lines nearby.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So it could be that just... That extra little bit of information helped the iPhones, you know, and the interference from that power line killed the GPS reception. You know, never try to use a GPS, especially one that has one of those high accuracy antennas.
Yeah.
If you're in like the urban canyons, like, you know, Chicago or New York, you're just not going to even get close.
Yeah.
Wow. So, yeah,
the multipathing on those are so bad that you have no idea where you're going to be.
Exactly. And even with the phones, you really don't have a good lock. You know, you're sometimes a block over.
Right.
Yeah, I've been in Seattle where my GPS was saying that I'm 3 blocks away, and my GPS is saying, or pardon me, my phone is saying that I'm about 100 feet away.
Right.
Right. So, you know, that's one of the nice things is with all that extra information that the cell phones can take in the cities.
Yeah.
They're usually more accurate.
Yeah.
But I put my money where my mouth was. You know, last Thursday, right before GeoGearheads, the Oregon 700 series was announced.
That looks sweet.
Well, it's basically just your 600 series. However, they've added the Wi-Fi and the Bluetooth with the apps, so there's now a geocaching live app on the device, you know, on the 700, 750, and 750T that gives you a connection to geocaching without using a computer.
That is so
sweet.
So
when you're at home, you can load up your lists. doesn't say pocket queries. It says lists. And anyone who checked out our show a couple of weeks ago on GeoGearheads, we were talking with Ben, who was telling us they're moving to lists. They're kind of moving away from pocket queries.
Yeah.
It's still basically the GPX file, right?
Queries. I mean, there's some of us GSAC folks out here that live off of pocket queries.
Well, I think we're still going to see the pocket queries, but they're going to move into lists. So pocket queries are going to go away. It's just going to become, you know, like a save search list.
Is it a different format file?
It sounds like that you'd have to create a list and then generate a GPX file out of that list.
Right. Yeah. That's what you have to do right now.
Right.
But the apps can pull the lists directly. Anything with the API. And I think even GSAC can pull the list directly. Right. So that's something that's coming.
I don't like to pull things because that means that I'm using power and I'm using my data plan. I'm cheap.
Right.
Oh, jeez.
But with the 700 series, if you're on Wi-Fi at home, you can pull all that stuff over. Then, and this is one of the questions, is can we actually still load the GPXs into the geocaching live app on the units? So I'll find out, of course, when I get it. But you can also have the Kinect app on your smartphone, and in the field, you can pick geocaches live.
Ooh.
So the first to find dream, you know, I'm thinking this is going to be a godsend when it comes to Periscope, too.
Do you remember the old days when the smartphones were the big expensive thing, and oh my God, we're taking them into the woods, and the GPX, the heavy-duty GPS units were like, oh my God, it's all this money as opposed to the phone. And now how much was your 750 you were talking about?
Well, they started about $400.
Yeah.
I ordered the 750, which I want to say it's supposed to be about a $500 unit. I want to say I paid like $470-ish for mine.
Yeah, and like the Galaxy S7 Edge is what, $1,000 now, you might as well say?
Well, it starts out at $650, if I recall, but you can get some of these unlocked phones, like the Moto G,
right,
for under $200.
Oh yeah, wow. I'm looking at the Samsung Galaxy J7, which is kind of like a lighter version of the Galaxy Note for my son, for like $230.
Yeah,
yeah.
But even the high end GPS units now are still nothing or comparable now to even before, where it was like, oh my God, you're going to spend all that money for a GPS? It's like, yeah, it's only $400.
Yeah, well, and now, you know, you're spending more on your GPS than on your smartphone. A lot of people are going for the used smartphones.
I talked
with several people around here where they buy the $50 smartphones and just don't activate them.
Right.
And then they have the GPS. You know, you download your info. You're caching offline just like you would with a GPS.
Yep.
It's better and it's faster. I am anxious to see what the Oregon 750 will do, you know, whether it actually works better or not. You know, this is something I've been screaming for over a year now. So I figured when they announced it, I had to go and get it because, you know, they finally
put it out
that I've been looking for.
So now is that Android apps on there?
No, it's the Kinect IQ apps.
Kinect IQ apps.
Yeah, it's their own proprietary apps. They've been doing it for a couple of years on the Forerunners.
Okay.
So this is a first handheld unit to use the apps. And I'm really anxious to see what comes of that as well.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that the geocaching has the app on the device after years and years of them working with the open caching stuff.
Yeah, I've just from listening to their representatives recently, they've really kind of done a 180 and are like, we want to be friends.
Yeah.
So I think that's a politic thing that you can go on and talk all you want later on. For now, though, hey, Taz, how about yourself? What did you end up doing this past week?
I went to an event down in Old Town Sac. Some folks from the Netherlands came over, and so we met the Danes and decided to go a little bit early, and there's a Where I Go that I was wanting to grab, so I started the Where I Go, picked up a letterbox along the way and a traditional along the way. Finally made it to the event and grabbed a puzzle and then DNF'd one final where I go. I made it to the end of the where I go, but I could not find that bugger.
Hate when that happens.
Yep.
All right, let's move on to the podcast roundup, letting our viewers know what's going on in the geocaching podcasting community. And what's coming up this week, Daryl, on GeoGearheads?
Well, this time we're going to have Lullaby for You join us to take a look at some of her really intriguing caches, especially her very, we'll say, intricate puzzle boxes.
Ooh.
And these are some serious puzzle boxes. She sent me some illustrations. You guys want to take a look at one of those real quick?
Yeah, let me get it on the photo on you. Go for it. Oh my god.
So holy near smokes. As I can tell, she's actually some kind of engineer.
I'm thinking
designer of some type. But she has been designing these apparently, and one of her friends has been building them.
Is that locking pins that are going up and down? That is awesome.
That's what it looks like.
Oh my god!
That's just one of them.
Oh man, yeah, intricate is something. Holy smokes! Yeah, I'm gonna.
So definitely a program to get excited about.
Yeah, that is neat. The Geekometer is going all the way over to the right. I love it. Excellent, excellent stuff. Also, tomorrow on the GeoSnippets Reboot podcast, we had a couple viewers call in and said they want to start getting into creating geocaches, but they want to know the different types of glues and epoxies and resins that you can use for when you're actually working with plastics and the different types of materials that geocaches are created. And I remember doing an episode about a couple of years ago, so we're going to be pulling some of that out and then adding in a whole bunch of the new type of things, because Gorilla's got some amazing glues out there now for just about anything that you can think of. So we'll be talking about that tomorrow on the GeoSnippets Reboot podcast as well. And finally, please, please, please consider, it does cost money to do podcasts like this each and every week. If you'd please consider going on to geocachingpodcast.com and clicking on either our Patreon or our PayPal graphics and throw us a couple bucks each month. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps keep the lights on and keep the show going. And for the people that are, thank you very much. And for the people that aren't, hey, come on board and become a contributing factor. We would greatly, greatly appreciate it. All right, good stuff. Let's move on. Not that we don't talk tech when Daryl's along, but we're talking tech today. We got a really cool article that I found out of wearable.com. And it's literally called 50 Wearable Tech Game Changers for 2016. And I thought, well, this is until we can get Daryl scheduled on where we can get everybody together, because Daryl actually has a whole series of video podcasts that he put together from the different podcasts out there. Daryl, why don't you tell him a little bit about that, because we want to get on that as well.
Yeah, we've done a few of the geocaching podcast profiles is what we're calling them, and you can find them on the GeoGearheads site, geogearheads.com/GPP. So there's, I want to say, five of them. I don't have them up right now, but it talks to a number of the different hosts and gets a feel for what those shows are like to produce from the perspective of the hosts.
Yeah, it's going to be really great, and we're looking forward to getting everybody and getting the gang together to talk about the old days and the new days and where we're at with Geocaching Podcast as well. So Daryl will definitely be part of that as well. All right, let me get this going here. So anyways, we'll have a link to the show notes to the 50 Wearable Tech Game Changers for 2016. And basically what we said with each of the hosts was, you know, whether it's geocaching related or not, this is just cool stuff and cool techno stuff. So we're going to have each of the hosts just kind of grab some of the ones that caught their eye and just kind of talk over this, because it's tech. Come on, it's cool. One of the ones, they literally have them numbered down from 50 down to 1. The one that caught my eye, just because, and I've been talking about VR type stuff for quite a while and how I'm excited about this getting into. I've just been born way too short or way too soon because all the cool toys are starting to come out. They've got something out here that is called the Void. And it's literally, this is what it has in here. If gaming were any more real, then it would no longer be a game. The Void is real-life VR theme park built in Salt Lake City. It's in its beta phase at the moment, but opening soon. Its virtual gaming experiences are superimposed onto a blank maze-like space. Sounds like something out of Star Trek. The upshot is that all your other senses buy into the vision of your adventure as well as just your eyes. So you wear your fancy schmancy VR helmet that's on here. They put you into a world. They actually have a picture showing all these guys and gals with large plastic swords. I'm hoping they're plastic. And off you go. So just the idea of being able to get into VR and to get into those type of things. I remember, do you remember Photon or Photon Arenas? There's still a couple that are out there. It's kind of like laser tag. When I was in, Daryl might even know about this because this was around his neck of the woods when I lived that way. In Madison Heights, there was a Photon Arena where they took a theater. And they got rid of all the seats, and they actually...
I remember laser tag out here.
Right.
In Madison Heights.
Yeah.
And I can't remember a Photon.
Yeah, Photon was like laser tag. The kicker was you had the whole thing. The battery pack must have weighed about 20 pounds. You had a chest plate. You had an entire helmet set up and the laser gun. And they had this three-level theater that they gutted and turned into this arena that you can go through and play. If you know laser tag, you know what I'm talking about. You got lasers and you shoot and you get points and all the rest of that stuff. That, to me, was what this is going to be on a whole different level, where you're actually running around with these with the VR and just doing whatever fantasy-type games that they're going to have. That's going to be amazing.
Yeah, there's a lot of that that people are talking about. And, Taz, you actually picked something that goes right along with that as well. But the one in that VR arena that I picked was number 22. They had YouTube 360.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and of course, this has to be on my list because I've been playing with the Theta S. And the resolution is currently a huge issue. But that looks like it's going to be resolved sooner than later. We have like the Key Mission, which is a 4K 360 spherical camera coming out. So that one's going to do it. And for about $5,000, you can actually get a small GoPro-based system that is going to give you really good 360s.
Yeah.
So it's not the kind of thing that you're going to run out and buy for yourself. However, think about doing some of these like races. You know, do it like a Tour de France bike tour where you're sitting right behind the rider, or you know, Baja races. That's going to change the whole concept of these videos, as you can look around in any direction.
Yeah.
And I still want to do more of these where I'm doing the 360 with the camera, you know, the spherical camera over my shoulder so that you're along for the ride and you're seeing what we're seeing as part of the caching crew.
Yeah, that's going to take people to so many different environments that you just don't know. And geocaches would be able to do this.
Yeah, and look at that one as a way for geocachers to learn how to geocache in different environments.
Yes.
You know, yep. Okay, we have to look out under this rock because we might have spiders. Well, okay, that's not something we have to deal with here. Or, you know, watch this crossing because there might be an alligator.
Yes.
You know, there's all kinds of stuff that now you can actually get a different experience and kind of get that feel for, this is how caching works in my neck of the woods.
Yeah, because even with on Saturdays with Periscope, you know, one second you're up into Quebec or you're up in Greater Canada, then you're off into somebody else that's doing geocaching in the desert. I mean, it's just amazing the different things that just with a scene on a video, but to be able to experience 360, that makes it even much cooler. Mr. Taz, how about yourself, sir?
Yeah, I'm hit on the VR topic as well. I actually got a couple of VR ones here. And, you know, VR is something that's got me very excited, but I'm also financially wary of investing in it because I don't know what's going to succeed and what's not going to succeed. I've seen great implementation of the technology, but the Gran Turismo Sport that PlayStation has, and I'm a PlayStation fanboy, so, but and I like racing games, so the Gran Turismo Sport has me very interested. It's probably the one thing that's kind of pushing me the most towards going VR, and which would be using the PlayStation VR. And the other one is the Microsoft HoloLens, which I kind of view that as VR meets AR, so virtual reality meets augmented reality.
Yeah.
It has a lot more potential for being able to do things out in the world where you see the virtual information, but you can see through it as well and see the environment. And I think it could be something that geocaching could potentially use in the future, kind of like a Where I Go, where you see things out there, and it doesn't necessarily need to be Microsoft HoloLens. It could be Google Glasses or something else as well. But you might see like some breadcrumbs, whether it's some trail out there when you're looking around, or buildings or other things that aren't physically there, but lead you on a discovery to that cache.
So you have daytime fire attacks, only it's during the daytime.
Yeah.
Instead of at night, you know, that kind of stuff. You can do all sorts of things with that.
Yeah, of course, I've been hearing a ton about these VR options, and HoloLens is one that really everyone is very impressed with, but doesn't exist yet.
Yeah.
You know, it's only the tech demos at the trade shows, and so, you know, they're talking about things like the virtual theaters and how amazing it is. You know, you don't expect that to be a big deal until you actually do it.
Yeah.
And then it's amazing.
Yeah.
And one of the demos was of Minecraft.
Oh, really?
Minecraft is amazing because you're actually setting these blocks and stuff on tables and on couches and, you know, throwing your couch. One of them was talking about throwing the couch out the window.
Yeah.
So, you know, so it's like all of this stuff that HoloLens can do.
Yeah.
But if you are going to get into VR right now, the consensus seems to be, unless you're really, really going to get into it, just do the PlayStation version. It's nowhere near as good, but it's nowhere near as expensive, and you know, if you have the PlayStation 4, your hardware will run it, and that's not the case with PCs.
Yeah. Yeah, I did the Samsung VR, and you see the cool demo with the sharks, and it's just amazing, the clarity. Now, how are they getting past? Now, this shows our age now. When we first started off with games like Doom, I know people that would have... they'd get seasick, literally, because the spin.
Yeah. You still have that. Frame rate, high frame rate is one way to kind of help that, but syncing, proper sync is another. Yeah. A lot of them are requiring 90 frames per second. The PlayStation VR is only requiring 60 frames per second. That's another thing that some people are kind of worried, that people who have motion sickness might not want the PlayStation VR. They're doing demos right now in Best Buys around the country on PlayStation VR. So, and if you're interested, go find out what Best Buy near you is doing the PlayStation VR demos and give it a try.
Yeah, because also at the Best Buy, check out the Samsung kiosk, because they've got their version of the VR there too.
Yeah, which is in cooperation with Oculus.
Yeah.
So it's good quality stuff, but because you're using the phone. And the original Oculus kits for developers were based on the screens from the Note. So that's one of the ways that they had that tie-in. But the other thing with the motion sickness is the graphics cards are so much better now than they were before. One of the big things that set off a lot of that, aside from the frame rate and the jerkiness, was you had these really unnaturally sharp edges.
Yes.
So the anti-aliasing that happens in the graphics chip, so it doesn't really take any processing from the computer, really helps to smooth that out and make that much more acceptable to your brain.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the NVIDIA's GTX 1080 series that was recently announced, and I don't know if it's quite made it to market fully yet, I know they got some of the preliminary ones out there on the market, but it's coming in the next month or two. It's really targeted towards that VR market.
Mm-mm-mm. It's going to be fun. I can't wait to see what the next, you know, 5-10 years are. And yet you still remember the times where your mother said, don't sit too close to the television screen. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Now, moving on a little bit, though, 23 was talking about the hearables.
Right.
Which is not something that we necessarily think would be a big deal. But what they're talking about is replacing the fitness trackers with earbuds. There's so much better data available from your ears than from your wrist.
Really?
Yeah. We're talking like the biometrics.
Yeah.
So that is a better place to get it, and you have better feedback. Plus, you don't have to look at it if it has audio feedback. So there's a lot that's happening in this space. There's a lot of talk that the hearables have the potential to completely replace the watch.
Wow.
And I would not be surprised, because the watch had gone away with the cell phone.
Right.
And then now it's come back. How long is it going to stick around this time? And something like the hearables, I think, really does have the potential to eliminate the watch in the future. It certainly is going to eliminate things like your smart or your Fitbit trackers and wristbands pretty quickly, just because it is so much better. And most people who are going to be out like running are going to want something in their ears anyway.
Right, for their music or whatever they're listening to.
Right. But that goes right along with number 35 on their list, which was the life-saving wearables. And this is going to be a lot bigger than I thought it ever could be. We've already seen a few cases of people who have been saved because their Apple Watch threw up a warning. One of them was actually a high school athlete. He was in practice or something like that. Uh-huh. And you know, I didn't have time to look up the article, but his watch went off and told him, you know, he was having some heart issues. Went to the hospital and found out he had a very serious condition.
Oh, geez.
That he probably would not have survived had he gone and played the game or practice or whatever it was.
Yeah, that's
amazing.
And
there's been other ones where people have, you know, of all ages have gotten similar warnings that their heart rate had issues. You know, go take care of it.
Yeah.
So just in the simple form we have now, and now they're talking about the bands and, you know, in the hearables, they're talking about other sensors, so they're going to get so much more than just heart rates. We're actually talking about blood pressure. We're talking about blood sugar.
Yes. One of the key things I just read about this weekend that they found out was when it comes for diabetics, the glucose readings and the sugar readings through tears. So they actually have contacts that you can wear that no more getting poked for the blood samples. They can get all the data right out of wearing the contacts.
Right. And the contacts are going to be a big thing in the future. There's a lot of patents. Google has patents. Sony has patents. Not that the patents are going to necessarily lead to anything, but it means there's a lot of research going on in this right now. And everyone's looking at the same two things. One, more better biometric data than you can get even out of the ear.
Right.
And two, can we get some virtual displays in there? Not necessarily at the level of like a VR, but just enough so that you can get some of the basic stuff, you know, like who is this person? You know, what is the contact information for them? You know, what's my incoming tweet?
Right.
You know, if you can just get some of that kind of stuff, you know, your text messages on the little virtual screen right in your eye, right in your vision.
Yep.
And you don't have to have anything, you know, on your wrist. That's very appealing.
I say they just cut to the chase and do the Matrix, put the plug in the back of your head and go. Let's just do it. Come on. Wow, good stuff. Let's see. The other one that I liked was number 10. They had smart home platforms. I rent a house right now, so I really don't get the opportunity to do this. But when I do actually get my house, hopefully in a not too distant future, this is the kind of stuff I do like, a lot of the more atmospheric LED lighting type things that you can do with the equipment that's out there now. And some of the stuff that they were talking here is the smart home, by tying all the different gadgets together, and some of the things that they were talking about here, technologies like Zigbee, Z-Wave, Thread are now ready to all work in the background. You know, I bet you Bill Gates has had this for 20 years now already, because I know for a fact when he built his house, some of this stuff was actually in there. There were even spots in there where the device was not actually even built yet, but it was incorporated into the floor plans for the house that he built. You know, that kind of stuff, being able to identify the person as they come into the room, so the different niceties change for whatever that is. I always thought that was interesting, if you have two siblings and what happens when they're both in the same room. But other than that, there's a lot of cool things that you can do now with music and with lighting and atmosphere. I just think it's awesome to be able to do stuff like that.
Well, and the real sleeper in this space has been number 44 on their list, the Amazon Echo.
Yes.
It's been a real game changer. I've got now three of them, two here at home, one on each floor, and then one at the office.
Are they that nice? Because they look like they're too cool to be able to be real.
You know, I never had any expectation these things weren't going to suck. The only reason I got it was they were talking about IFT integration, if this, then that. And I have the Ecobee 3 thermostat. I have Lutron. You know, I've got the automatic. There's all kinds of other cool stuff that ties into IFT. So it's like, okay, if I've got all this stuff that talks with IFT and this talks with IFT, it's worth trying. And I think I got it for $150 sale.
Right.
And now I'll have, you know, another Bluetooth speaker.
I'm holding off on that. It's like, I'll use myself, you know, I use my cell phone for all my Internet of Things accesses, for, you know, controlling the thermostats and cameras and all that nice stuff. But I just can't sit there and talk, give instructions to a inanimate object. It's just, yeah. I'm not a Siri user. I'm not a Google S user.
And I'm the same way. But for some reason, the Echo is different and has worked for me. We just had a whole bunch of work done here, which unfortunately hasn't been finished yet. But when I redid the lighting and the fan in the kitchen, I went and put the Lutron in, because that gives us the, you know, Internet of Things kind of stuff.
Sure.
So my thought was, well, I don't necessarily want the dimmable lights and that kind of stuff in the kitchen, but wouldn't it be cool if I got my hands full of, like, you know, cake batter and need to turn on the fan to just say, fan on?
Yes.
And it works. It is amazing. You know, and when I want to go to sleep, I just say trigger night-night mode.
Yeah.
And it turns off all of the lights, including the porch light, and sets the thermostat for night mode.
Yep.
You know, just... Yeah, it's amazing at what you can do with IFT, and that's one of the things that I'm kind of disappointed didn't make this list, especially because this list really had very few wearable things on it.
Yeah.
IFT is one of those technologies that's enabling so many other things, and I wish it did so much more than it does, but even the little bit that it does is truly amazing.
I think once you get used to it and you're actually used to just, I would love to be able to come in the house and not have to fumble for the darn light switch, and just to be able to say lights on and have them turn on, or have one light, key light turn on. I mean, it's neat. I like that.
Better than that, why not just have the light turn on when you pull in the driveway?
When you pull in the driveway and have it registered that. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, and we have our Ecobee, our thermostat, where when everyone leaves, it goes into its away mode. When one of us is home, it goes right back to home mode.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, let's face it, you can do there's so many ways of connecting these ways. I don't know if people use it anymore, but you, a few years ago, one of the cool things you could do with your smartwatches is, if you were at home, the GPS would kick off, and the settings for your watch and your phone would match for the type of things when you're at home. When you head towards work and get to within a certain distance from it, it would turn on all the different things for work. and reset it for whatever for that. That kind of thinking, I love that.
Well, and a lot of that's actually built into the OS now. It used to be you had separate apps to do it.
Right.
Now the OS is doing it, both Android and iOS. And it's really kind of freaky how much Google knows about you when you start actually using that.
Yes.
And how cool it is. You know, you're thinking, this is really scary that Google has this much information on me. But can I give you more so that you can do, more
you
cool
do better
stuff
things? Exactly. Just look at Google Photos for crying out loud. It is creepy where you put in a search. If you've got, I've got everything in Google Photos. And to be able to just put the search criteria and have it match with the accuracy that it does, it's freaky. It really is. And then with the face recognition, there is no place to hide, folks. I'm sorry. There just isn't.
No. And I get freaked out because every time I get in the car, it's telling me, okay, your drive time to, you know,
this is your fastest route.
Well, no, it doesn't even tell me that. It's just, you know, your drive time is approximately this many minutes.
Yeah.
It's like, I haven't even told you where I'm going. You know, now granted, a lot of the time it tells me I'm going somewhere that, you know.
Yes.
Yes, I go there, you know, 3 days a week, but, you know, this is day four. I'm not going there.
Yeah, mine's always, you know, 15 minutes to work or 15 minutes home.
Yeah,
it's almost always saying that when I pull it up.
Yeah, well, whenever I leave midday to go to the bank for work, it's telling me, you know, okay, it's 15 minutes here. Well, no, I'm not going there today. I'm going over here today.
Yes, exactly. But then again, it'll eventually have an algorithm that'll come up with the probability of going to one place as to another because of your habits.
Yeah, well, it's already doing that, but it fortunately is smart enough to look at the calendar and say, oh, well, you have this on the calendar. It will take you this. But now we just have to actually put those events on the calendar.
In the calendar, yeah. The human factor is there. There was one in here for number 7 with wearable payments. And it was funny. I just happened to be in a store yesterday. And one of the ladies was like, oh, can I do Apple Pay? And she couldn't figure out how to get the Apple Pay to start. So people are starting to cross over that bit of anxiety of getting into wearable payments. And but how far is it? How long is it going to be till they do that?
Well, you know, for me, so far it's only been kind of like a test it out, see that it works with my phone. I've done the Samsung Pay. I've done the Android Pay or Google Pay. And it's something that I haven't broken the habit of pulling my wallet out to grab my credit card and sticking it in there. But I may just do that. I recently, as in this past weekend, found out that my credit card was compromised.
Ooh,
yeah. Well, so, this is one of the things about the wearable payments in general. The wearable payments are actually more secure than the actual cards are because they can talk with the different networks and give you, you know, these individual tokens.
Right.
So Android Wear and Google Pay and Apple Pay don't actually send your credit card.
Right.
It's a token. It's a one-time token. It's only good for a short period of time, and then it doesn't do them any good
after that. Yeah.
Yeah. So if they get like a Target or a Home Depot style breach, no one can do anything with that data.
Yeah.
And it's easily 7 or 8 times faster than using EMV. EMV is a huge mess, and that's those little chips on the card.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. It's, you know, 20, 30-year-old technology, something like that.
Yes, with the angry beeps.
It doesn't really do much for security.
Yeah.
Especially when it's chip and sign as opposed to chip and pin.
Right. But regardless, anytime you have the chip, it's still, you know, it's encrypted data, but you can still do this encrypted data with a MagStripe. It's not giving you that much more than the MagStripe does, and it really doesn't work very well.
I would feel much safer with the information in my phone that I keep locked and go that way and use it, like you said, through the tokens and going that, than having a credit card in my wallet.
Well, and it's actually at the point now that if I have the option of Apple Pay, I will use it. If I don't, I generally won't shop there.
Yeah.
Or if it's a small item, you know, I'll use cash. But I really don't pull out the credit cards anymore. And a lot of that is just because EMV is such a pain. It's just not worth it. And I really don't have much faith in the technology behind it anymore.
Yeah, I've actually had my card, my bank, send me a new card saying, oh, by the way, there was some kind of breach. Oh, really? Who was it? Oh, well, we can't say. and have them send another card. I within the past 2 years, I think I've had three cards sent to me.
Yeah, I have two cards that's happened. One of them was definitely the Target breach.
Yeah.
The other one, we don't really know who it was, and it was a new card that has only been issued like 6 months earlier.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. Well, hopefully the security keeps going and growing because we're putting it out there anyways. It's there. Wow. All right. Good stuff. Anything else, gentlemen?
One more. The Moto 360 Sport. So finally, actually it's the second Android Wear watch that has GPSR actually built in. You know, this is something for the CG Wear maker out there. It's like, now let's port those coordinates over there and use the GPSR and compass on the watch to get rid of the lag so that we have a actual radar type or compass type direction pointing that isn't going.
Well, and I think we're going to see more of this support happen with the new version of the OS for Android Wear.
Yeah.
What they were talking, you know, it's really going to be a huge shock for both Apple Watch and for Android Wear users when they get the new versions of each of those, because they've made such dramatic changes in the way that watches work. But they're also giving you such improvements that it's going to be worth dealing with it. And I think overall, from what I've seen, I like the way stuff works in these new OSs.
Yeah.
That's not to say that I like a lot of it, but overall, I think it's the checks in the win column rather than the loss.
Yeah. Well, aren't they trying to push now actually a breakaway for the watches into being, instead of just being an extension from the phone, now they actually want them to be their own devices?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everyone is working on getting apps running on the watch where they can run without the phone. You know, you're not going to have full capabilities without the connection to the phone. But they're in the process of freeing the watches to do work without having to have the phone nearby.
Right. Yeah, good stuff. So like I said, born way too early, and I'm sorry, they still don't have my flying car. I got my Dick Tracy watch now. I want my flying car.
Well, they got your self-driving cars. It's just you got to watch out for those semis crossing the road in front of you.
Wow, this is going to be fun. We'll see what happens. This is going to be a very exciting decade. I can see.
I just want my jetpack so that I can
exactly
jump those streams to get to the cache.
Exactly, and not burn your butt off while you're doing it. That's the secret.
Right.
All right, gentlemen. Well, thank you so much, Daryl. Always a pleasure. It is fun, and I love talking tech with you. It's absolutely the greatest. So thank you so much, Taz. You too. Thank you for being on, as always, sir. And, excellent. Hopefully we'll schedule relatively soon to get all of us together in one big happy group and go from there. So that'll be great.
I'm looking forward to that.
All right. Good stuff. All right, folks. Well, thank you so much for stopping on by. Again, please consider supporting our show. We greatly appreciate it. And also tell others about the Geocaching Podcast and have them come in and join in on the fun each and every week with us. All right. Good stuff. Let's move on. Thank you for subscribing to the Geocaching Podcast. Please be sure to join us each and every Wednesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time for another episode of the Geocaching Podcast right here at the Geocaching Podcast website at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. The video version of our show is available on YouTube, and the audio version is available on our home website, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and many of your favorite podcatchers. We love hearing from our viewers and listeners, so please visit us through our social media sites or contact us via our voicemail line at 630-31-VOICE. The Geocaching Podcast is a Head Hard Hat production and is produced by Andy Smith, Scott Burks, Corey Stevens, and Chad Courtney. The show is copyright 2016 by Andrew T. Smith. All rights reserved.